thank you for joining me for another episode of the Rare Disorder Podcast. I'm your host, Shivani, and this is my fourth episode of my Meet a Fighter series, so let's dive right into it. So today, I'm going to be addressing the rare condition, hyperacusis. So, how rare is it? It affects 1 in 50,000 people, making it an extremely rare condition. So, what is it? Hyperacusis is a hearing disorder that results in difficulty tolerating sounds that would not bother most people. This disorder can result from many different things, such as neurological disorders, head injury, and viral infections. It is commonly found in individuals with autism disorders, and some examples of things that may seem louder than normal to a person with hyperacusis include a kitchen appliance, such as a microwave, a car engine, a loud conversation, or even a running faucet. So, what are some symptoms? Symptoms include depression, anxiety, ear pain, relationship problems, and trouble connecting with others, such as avoidance and social isolation. What are the causes? People aren't typically born with hyperacusis. It rather results from health issues or certain diseases. Although there are many causes, some specific ones include an injury to your head, damage to one or both ears due to medication or toxins, or a viral infection that affects your inner ear. How is it diagnosed? To diagnose hyperacusis, you will visit an otolaryngologist, which is an ear, nose, and throat doctor, and they will examine you and give you a hearing test to assist with the diagnosis. Some related disorders include autism, Lyme disease, Tay-Sachs disease, and many more. So, what are the therapy and treatment options for a person with hyperacusis? The first is sound desensitization, where you will work with a specialist who will help you deal with sound by building up sounds over time. You also may wear a device which will help you over time with hearing sounds. In addition, another way is auditory integration therapy, or AIT, where you listen to different music at different volumes for a period of time every day. Now, I am so excited to welcome Gemma, who is a fighter of hyperacusis. I am so excited to have you on my podcast today. To start, I was wondering if you could talk about an average day in your life with this rare condition.
So, currently, I spend the majority of my time either in my soundproof bedroom or my closet inside of the soundproof bedroom because the heating and air conditioning unit cause me pain. I also spend a good deal of time in my grandmother's underground basement where it's very quiet. I'm not able to go to stores, malls, restaurants, listen to music, attend social events or social gatherings, and even things like running water or microwave are physically painful for me. I wear hearing protection inside of my house, and it still doesn't block out enough. My family has to keep the TV down very low. I have my cell phone on flash so that it does not ring. I do need help with some basic things. I mentioned the running of water for a bath and using the microwave to heat things up. So my family does help me with those things. And whenever anyone comes to the house, like today, cleaning people came to my grandma's. So I had us driven away to my own house. So we always have to leave whenever any types of instruction people come. I've been doing distance learning this year since the pandemic, and that's been very helpful for me.
Mm-hmm. All right, so just moving on, is there anything you feel that other people should know about your disorder?
Yes, a lot of people, unfortunately, including in the medical community, think that hyperacusis is a psychogenic or psychological condition. And unfortunately, most of my life growing up, the doctors treated it like it was a psychological condition. And so I was subjected to a lot of different gradual sound exposure and sound therapy treatments. I was even hospitalized in a psychiatric ward, and they did not make any accommodations. And I was in very extreme pain. And a lot of new research, thankfully, has come out in the past 2 years about physical mechanisms behind hyperacusis with pain, as well as research being done with what's known as setbacks, where when we're exposed to more noise, our condition actually gets worse and decreases our tolerance and increases the pain level. So I want people to know that it is a physical condition, and a lot of doctors really don't understand it, and the research and science is just emerging.
Mm-hmm. So how are you coping with this condition?
Mainly because there is no effective treatment, as I was mentioning earlier. The main thing, because doctors don't understand it, is a lot of the sound exposure and desensitization treatments, which for patients who have the pain hyperacusis, because a lot of people in the medical community don't know the difference between sound sensitivity, or like misophonia, and hyperacusis, even though the patients are telling them that they're in pain, they don't really listen. And so since there's really no cure and no effective pain medicine, the best thing that I can do, and that I do on a daily basis, is just staying in the quiet and avoiding noise as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. So have you ever encountered a major struggle with your condition, and how did you overcome it?
Many times in my childhood, I'd say the biggest struggle was when my pain built up so much when I was around 10, because I felt very afraid, because in the past there had been a lot of different attempts at exposing me to noise, trying to have me slowly turn up the volume on electronics, playing different types of noise machines, trying to have me actually attend school rather than being on home instruction, and different things that had kept increasing my pain. And it was becoming a cycle where I felt I was constantly having to fight. And so I felt like if that was just going to be the case, that there was no point to living anymore. And if the pain and everything wasn't going to get better, and no one really understood. So I tried to kill myself and ended up in a psychiatric hospital. And it was so painful there. It was mostly a lot of kids who were screaming and nonverbal. I was locked out of my bedroom so that I could not get away from the noise. It felt literally like my skull and my ears were being crushed and on fire, because it was so painful. And in addition, I was not able to take off my hearing protection at all, because it was so loud. So my ears kind of were getting stabs, and really sores as well. The doctors there, they tried to convince my parents that it was purely a behavioral problem, and implemented sent us home with another sound exposure plan, which took me off of home instruction, and I had to attend this his special educational program. And the staff eventually, they recognized that it was physical over years of working with me, but just attending every day, I wasn't able to do anything after school but really sleep in my closet. It took me years of having to do, from the time I was 11 to around 15, my own research into hyperacusis. I found out about the nonprofit organization Hyperacusis Research, and I've been in contact with President Brian Pollard, and I would use a lot of the research to write almost like papers to my doctors, trying to get them to understand my condition. I also found out about the support group, which has some connection with the organization, Hyperacusis Research and Support, and a lot of the people there really educated me on the lack of information and inaccurate information that doctors have about the condition. And so I was able to really use that to finally get my parents and doctors to realize that my condition was physical, and to make the accommodations and stop the harmful treatment.
Mm-hmm. So I know you have an Instagram about hyperacusis awareness. So what are some initiatives that you take to raise awareness for this condition?
Well, I hosted in May the first Hyperacusis Awareness Conference. I tried to communicate with my state legislative officials. I was able to get a proclamation signed by the governor of Maryland, as well as a citation from the Maryland General Assembly, and to get Clarence Lamb, one of my senators, and Jessica Feldmark, one of the delegates, to come to the conference. I also meet with them on a somewhat regular basis, and I'm trying to get, my big goal is to make it nationwide, but to start in Maryland with getting a Title VI for telepresence and high-level sensory modifications added to the ADA, not only to help people with hyperacusis, but other chronic illnesses and environmental illnesses. I also try to help and support other people with hyperacusis in the hyperacusis supporting research group. And I've started a separate teen group on Facebook to try to help teenagers with hyperacusis be able to connect with each other. And then I do a lot of things like this podcast interview and different articles that I write for organizations like the Hearing Health Foundation, even organizations that have nothing to do with hyperacusis will invite me to share my own story, and also about some of the science regarding hyperacusis. In my email address, I actually have a brief explanation about what hyperacusis is and links to the latest research articles so that people can gain an understanding that it is a real physical condition.
Mm-hmm. So I was also wondering if there are any resources you would like to share on my podcast that you have come across to help other people who are fighting the same condition.
Yes, I would definitely recommend the nonprofit organization, Hyperacusis Research. And there's several medical articles that I can give you links to, as well as to their organization, if you can put those in the podcast description. I would also recommend the support group there on Facebook, Hyperacusis Research and Support. And also my own website, I list some different resources there. I have a blog about hyperacusis and different programs that I'm starting, like an ambassador's program to raise awareness, and a program to offer patients kind of a mentorship and support, as well as other initiatives on there. So I can give you links to those resources if you're able to put them in the podcast description.
Yeah, of course. And then just closing off now, so I was just wondering if there was anything else you would like to share with my podcast listeners?
I would say that if someone, and this doesn't just go for hyperacusis, tells you that they're in pain from something, no matter how bizarre it may seem to you, and even if the medical world is saying that that cannot be, that you need to believe them. And for people who have hyperacusis or any other condition, to know that you are the expert in your own body. Medical science has been wrong about many other conditions that I've thought to be psychosomatic, that we now understand the physical mechanisms behind. And to listen to your own body. If something's causing you pain, then don't do it, and respect your limitations.
All right. I would just like to thank you so much, Gemma, for joining me today and really helping spread awareness for hyperacusis. And I'm sure my listeners will definitely learn a lot from this. So just thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.